right. We have been looking at the history of the church from the very beginning. We started out by looking at prophecies about the coming of the church. You know, we looked in Isaiah 2 and Joel 2 and a number of places. And then we looked at the establishment of the church in the first century and how it met those prophecies. And then we looked at how different ones started to depart from what God said. And the first departure was in leadership and how that led to various errors being taught about bishops and elders and all of these things that we discussed. And then we went through the Dark Ages with the Roman Catholic Church. And then we started to look at the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, which kind of started in the 13 and 1400s. And we looked at people who were persecuted for trying to translate the Bible. And we looked at where some of the religious groups started and who started them and why they got started and how they got started and where they got started. We talked somewhat about John Wesley, and that would have been in the 1700s. He's considered the father of the Methodist Church and why it got started. Because it kind of got started at Oxford University. There was a group of college students, including himself, that didn't like how the Catholic Church was going. And so they started what we would consider a religious club, and it had a variety of names, but one of the names was Methodist. And that's kind of the one that stuck. And he, of course, is known for a number of things that he started. One of the things that is still practiced in some churches today, especially the Nazarene Church, which is kind of an offshoot of the Methodist Church, is what they called, it goes by a lot of names. Sometimes it's called the double cure. You know, we've got the song Rock of Ages that mentions the double cure. Well, that comes from John Wesley and his idea of perfectionism, that you can attain what he would call perfection in that sense of almost being sinless and kind of a freedom from sin. Modern Methodists, most of them don't believe that anymore. But one of them that does is the Nazarene Church, and they still believe, as far as I know, that, as well as some of the holiness groups do that as well. Methodism, when it came to the United States especially, was where we got the idea of circuit riders, circuit preachers. And they were from the Methodist Church, and they would literally do just what it sounds like. They would go from one church to another, to another, to another, kind of in a circuit, and then they would repeat, kind of in a cycle. And they were like writing preachers. So Methodism was one of the first ones to come to the United States. But it started in England way back in the 1700s. But that's what it was. It started out at a university, which is kind of rare. And especially it started out at Oxford University. But a lot of so-called Christian thinkers have came from Oxford and Cambridge. People like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and people like that are known all over the world. Well, then it starts what's sometimes called the Great Awakening. And this is what it was called in the United States. And it started in the 1700s. And it's interesting that it started in the United States kind of about the time where the United States was trying to get independence from Great Britain. So in that time frame is what's called the Great Awakening in the United States. And there were two. The first one was in the 1700s, and then there was the second Great Awakening was in the 1800s that we'll get to. And of course, one of the reasons for this was in the late 1700s is when we had the Constitution that declared that no religion would be given precedence over any other religion. All right, there wouldn't be any respecting of religions. All religions were to be treated equally. None of them were to be favored. Some of the states, if you remember, kind of were started religiously. Some of them had a very Baptist background, but some of them had other backgrounds, Presbyterian, Methodism, and so the Constitution was needed so that people wouldn't be discriminated against. So if you were a Methodist living in a prominent Baptist state, you wouldn't be discriminated against. So in the late 1700s, Congress established that part of the Constitution so that people could have freedom of religion and they could practice any religion that they wanted to. A kind of an unusual religion started at this time as well. We don't see it around here in the Midwest at all. There is one church in Springfield. It's kind of south. If you've ever been to the Battlefield Mall, Battlefield runs east and west. And if you go just east of the mall on Battlefield, you'll come to it on the south side of the road. And it's called a Unitarian Universalist Church. It's the only one I know of in southwest Missouri. There might be someone somewhere else. But it was started in New England, and it was very prominent in Massachusetts. Late 1700s, early 1800s. And it basically, there were two churches. There was a Unitarian Church, a Universalist Church, but they basically taught the exact same thing, so they merged, and now they're called Unitarian Universalist Church, and they believe that everybody will be saved. There won't be anybody in hell at all. And that's the idea of the Universalist part. Everybody will ultimately be saved. Even the worst people, in their idea, the most evil, they'll have a short time of suffering, and then they'll get to go to heaven. People. John Murray is considered the founder of that. And again, that's in the late 1700s, early 1800s. A very unusual group. And they don't really... There is no salvation really with them. There's no really... They don't really worship in that sense. They're just focused on doing social work. So it's kind of a religion and kind of not a religion. So that's basically what they practice. And they have basically like seven teachings, sort of, that they follow. But there isn't any real worship. There's no conversion process, nothing like that at all.
And it's a happy gathering, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it would be. Yeah, it's definitely a very, very happy place in that sense.
Party time all the time.
We have others that were being started. So while there was a Great Awakening in the United States, there was also, this whole Protestant Reformation going on in Europe. In all different kinds of places. In the United States, this Great Awakening kind of led to revivals, tent revivals. And if you've ever read about some of them, some of them got pretty out of hand. But it was kind of a response. A lot of things that happen in the religious world are responses to other things that happen in the religious world. Because at this time, especially in Europe, and predominantly in Germany, was very liberal theology starting. At places like the School of Tübingen, which was one of the biggest places, and they started teaching, you know, miracles didn't happen, Jesus didn't actually die on the cross, a lot of the Bible wasn't written by who it says was written by. And so a lot of this revivalism and emotionalism that accompanied it was a reaction to that thinking. So it was from one extreme to the other, is basically what it was. So there was a lot of emotionalism, and really that's when you started to see major differences in liberal theology and conservative theology. Big differences between them. Let's see. Early 1800s, we had people, I mentioned that miracles were not possible. This was when people started to look at the Bible and say, well, that couldn't have happened, that couldn't have happened, that couldn't have happened, so we've got to take that out of the Bible. Because they called them myths. And so when they take the, quote, myths out of the Bible, they demythologized it. They took out all what they believed were myths. And obviously, didn't leave a lot. So what they had to do was, they had to come up with so-called natural explanations for what they saw. Here's a few of them. Jesus walking on the water was an optical illusion. The disciples just thought that Jesus was walking on the water. He really wasn't. He was walking on the shore, and there was mist, and it looked like he was walking on the water. His feeding the 5,000 was, he took his food and gave it to some people. Well, some other people had food, so they shared it with other people. And so it was just a lot of people sharing with others. So that was the type of things happening in the 1800s. Well, there were reactions to that, just like there always is. There were people, if you've ever heard of the Plymouth Brethren, I don't even know how to describe them really. They were kind of a reaction against those people to Salvation Army, the same way. Salvation Army was kind of a reaction to that type of thing. It was started in England, and it was started not so much as a church, but as a way to help especially poor young people that lived in parts of London especially that were in really terrible shape. So it kind of started out that way, but it had a military organization, still does. It still has a military organization, the Salvation Army does. And it's been around now about 150 years, almost. But they were street evangelists. If you ever saw some pictures of London back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you'll see these street evangelists, Salvation Army, and they usually have, you know, some type of a military-looking uniform, but that's what they were doing. They set out to try and help the poor people. In the United States, we started having camp meetings and those tent revivals that had a lot of fervor with them. And I'll talk more about these in just a minute, but it was during the 19th century when we saw the beginning of the Second Day Adventist the Mormon Church, Latter-day Saints, Jehovah's Witnesses, all of those started during this time period in the 19th century. And they all had slightly different ideas that we'll talk about in a minute. But the Shakers, we mentioned them last week just briefly. They had some unusual beliefs. They lived in communities. You know, it was kind of a communal living. They were celibate, which is why they died out. The last two Shakers were both women, and they lived in New England somewhere, and both of them passed away about, I don't know, it was a few years ago. And they were the last two Shakers, and they passed away. But their idea was that this was to prepare them for the coming of the kingdom. I mentioned the Brethren. They wanted to be like the New Testament Christians. They were a little different than Quakers, but they had some of the same beliefs. The three that I mentioned, Mormonism was basically started in 1830. We'll just give a real brief overview of it. And of course, Joseph Smith was the one that founded it, and he's the one that his writings are considered holy and sacred. He claimed to have translated it from golden plates that he found, and allegedly he was directed by an angel to find them. There was a lot of history of the Mormons in this country if you read about their beginning, and there was a lot of physical violence involved with the Mormons, a lot of battles from, you know, the East Coast all the way out to the West, a lot of things that deal with them. There's more than one type of Mormon church today. I know we have at least two in Neosho. But the main one, of course, and the biggest one is out in Salt Lake City. But the other one is now called the Community of Christ. If you've ever seen those around, that's not what they used to be called. They've changed their name. But if you see Community of Christ, they are Mormons, but not associated with the Mormon Church in Salt Lake City. Somewhere along the line, a descendant, one of Joseph Smith's descendants, had problems with the Mormon Church in Salt Lake City. And so he broke away from it. And so now one of Joseph Smith's descendants is actually the head of the Community of Christ, and that's the one that's in Kansas City, in Independence. But he's an actual descendant of Joseph Smith, the one that's the head of the one in Kansas City. It would take weeks and weeks, and I had a study once on Mormonism here, to describe all of their teachings. Seventh-day Adventist started in the 1840s. They started as a group that was predicting Christ's return. They predicted Christ's return several times. Of course, they were wrong on all of them. one of the people that was prominent in the Seventh-day Adventist was a doctor by the name of Dr. John Kellogg. And of course we have Kellogg's cornflakes as a result of him. He was a strict nutritionist. You couldn't eat pork, no alcohol, no tobacco. And he started Kellogg's cornflakes as a nutritional meal. Because back in the 1800s, a lot of people weren't eating the kind of food they needed, so he started Kellogg's Corn Flakes with that in mind. One of the things they're well known for is hospitals. All over the world, there's many, many, many hospitals that were started by Seventh-day Adventists. And that's basically, there's not very many of them in the United States, but if you go outside the United States to third world countries, you'll see more, more of them. Their beliefs are quite different. The one that really started it was William Miller, and then after that came Ellen G. White, who was very well known in that in those circles. But even still today, they have strict dietary restrictions, very strict ones, in that particular church. Christian Science. You know, in Joplin, there's a Christian Science reading room right on, I think it's Connecticut and about 16th Street in Joplin. She's the one that started Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and that is their, like, Bible. It was organized in Boston in 1879, and the idea of her religion was that she had discovered the secret of Jesus' healing powers. So she believed that sin and disease and death were illusions. Living and dying and disease were not real. And that's still taught in Christian Science circles. If you remember all the way back to the days of Richard Nixon and all of that, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, remember those guys? They were both Christian Scientists. They don't have preachers or gospel meetings or anything like that. It's about reading, about coming in and reading her material. That's why they have these reading rooms. The last one, Jehovah's Witnesses, this name was started or given, or they chose it back in the early 1900s with Charles T. Russell. He was another person that predicted the return of Christ. They have their own Bible called the New World Translation, which is quite different than the ones we use. They don't believe that Jesus was divine. They don't believe he was the Son of God. That's probably their biggest difference. People who have been Jehovah's Witnesses, if you're a fan of tennis, Venus and Serena Williams, they're Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know how fervent they are about their religion, but many of the Jacksons were, you know, the Tito Jacksons, the Michael Jacksons, and all of those at one time were. If you watch any certain types of comedy shows, the Damon Wayans and his brother are Jehovah's Witnesses. So those were all started during what we would call the Second Great Awakening in the United States. All of those, the Mormon Church, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Christian Science, all of those were kind of started during that time period. A lot of them had to do with health. A lot of them had to do with like the Salvation Army, Army helping poor people in some way. So there was a lot of social gospel intertwined with them. And that brings us up to what I'm going to call the Restoration Movement. We've talked about reforming the Catholic Church with people like John Calvin and Martin Luther and John Glass and people like that. Now we're going to talk about in the early 1800s, in certain places in Europe, England, Scotland, especially Scotland, there were different people, different groups of people, organizations that saw that Reformation didn't work. And their idea was, we have to go back to the Bible, all the way back to the first century, to be New Testament Christians. And it's called many things by many different people, but that's where we're going to go to next. And it's all going to start around 1800 in that neighborhood. And we're going to look at a lot of people who had a great deal of courage because they went against the flow. They went against the flow. And to start the true New Testament church. And it'll be incredibly encouraging. I'm a real church history person, and I absolutely love reading about church history. I mentioned Wednesday night, I think it was, about reading the book Arkansas Angels that was just came out a few years ago. But some of those people go back to the mid-1800s, even in Arkansas. So before the Civil War. So it is very edifying and faith-building and encouraging to read about what these people did and how much courage they had to have. Anybody have any comments or anything? We'll start with this next Sunday morning, Lord willing.